It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, William, Oreo cookies, what's your feeling on them?
Well, I have always liked Oreo cookies, and, you know, they have different varieties too, which I've normally also liked.
Many varieties these days.
I think I like, you know, the kind that have extra filling in the middle. I think I like those probably the most.
But that doesn't really narrow it down these days. Are you talking about double stuff? Or most stuff, or I believe there's one called even more stuff. Like, there's a lot of different stuff levels.
Yes, there are. And I think I like all of those. I suppose if I try them all, which I haven't, you know, one of them might start to feel like a little bit much. Double stuffs don't seem like too much.
No, I find double stuff about the right ratio.
Okay, well, I would too. I have no idea. But
These are not unusual opinions. They're very, very, very popular cookie. What one could argue, one of the most popular cookies in North America, at least, and I think probably in several other countries out there. Much of the Western world knows Oreos. Most of us have eaten them, or knockoffs, or Hydrox, which are the originals. For our whole lives. Do you remember your first Oreo?
I'm not even sure.
I'm curious.
I'm not sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure the first cookie like that I ever had wasn't an Oreo. I'm pretty sure.
But you don't remember.
I don't remember specifically.
And you certainly don't remember your first name brand Oreo.
Nope.
That is fascinating. Neither do I. I wonder why that is. Possibly because we were probably small children and eat tons of them all the time. And while it is a good cookie, it is not a life-changing accomplishment. And yet, the most recent Oreo commercial I keep seeing, their entire tagline for it is, "You never forget your first Oreo." Which I'm like, absolutely not true. Almost not. I would venture a guess that 99.99% of people who had their first Oreo before puberty do not recall the specific Oreo. And most of those after that, probably at least 80 to 90% of those also don't. But here is where it gets weird. Because this commercial in question is not advertising Oreos, even though the tagline is, "You never forget your first Oreo." The tagline is that, but the product is the gluten-free Oreos, which I have heard are not bad. I have some friends who are celiac, and they say they are okay. They are making this comparison to real Oreos, because, of course, they have had real Oreos in the past, because... And y'all need to help me out with this, because I've not known too many celiac children. But gluten intolerance is one of those things that you don't just, the doctors run a test one day and they're like, "Did you know you're gluten intolerant?" No. You do things and you get ill. And in the process of trying to eliminate what made you ill, you eventually, hopefully, see a pattern tied to gluten.
Yeah. A lot Which of food means, intolerances are that way.
To me, that virtually no celiac individual ever had a gluten-free Oreo as their first Oreo. So even then, it's not a thing. Because the implication to me is that, oh, see, now celiac people who have never had an Oreo can have one. And I'm like, no. But also, because I've been raging about this for days now, I realized there's a further implication here, because we're talking about the gluten-free Oreos. So we're talking about people with gluten intolerance. And you never forget your first Oreo, which we've established is almost certainly not the gluten-free one. So what this commercial is inadvertently saying is, you always remembered your first Oreo because it made you shit yourself violent. Well, now we have an Oreo we'll call your second Oreo that will not do this. Please buy our product. There's so much of this going on these days. The first, I've seen this commercial many times. The first time I saw it, I didn't even bat an eye. Of course, it's a commercial of young people having Oreos. And it's great. And they're like, you never forget your first Oreo. It makes total sense. Completely. And then the second time I was like, wait, what? I don't remember my first Oreo. Who would? How many people are like, oh, I was 5. And my dad said, you want a cookie? And I said, yeah. And he gave me this cookie like I'd never seen before. Like, no, no. It's like my earliest memories, I already have like a half masticated Oreo in my hand, clutched in my hand.
And then you think to yourself, crap, I missed it. Yes. I don't remember eating.
Looking at my parents, where did this come from? Tell me. How did this get in my hand?
Please
was
tell
it
me
old I have when it, just, it started.
Please tell me I haven't just forgotten because I need to remember.
Other little toddler hand gripping their lapels, being like, you have to tell me. I can't forget my first Oreo. Was this the first one? How many times has this happened? Cut to Guy Pearce, and it says like 30 years later, and he's got a tattoo. Your first Oreo was at age 4.
Yep, that's what I was thinking too.
Your parents... Don't trust your parents' lies. They'll tell you it was later.
That's good.
Just a whole bunch of Polaroids of different cookies and little Sharpie notes on them.
That's good.
I'm going to treasure for a while the image of just like a really angry baby with a half chewed up in their hand, just being like, where did I get this? You have to tell me. There's a very Christian Bale Batman energy to the voice. or Ben Affleck in Dawn of Justice. Why did you say that name? Okay, I take it back. I love this commercial so much for all the joy it has brought me in the world. But it's still a lie. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that gained self-awareness in 2015 and has since been ushering in the last age of man to bring about the first age of hats. I didn't write that, and we don't have an auto cue, so I'm a little confused. Whatever. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 640.
Yes, and William's voice sounds different because his mic may just have died. We don't know. His mic is on the injured list right now, the injured reserve. So I'm assuming this is just your computer's built-in mic, which is what I use. So who are you to judge? I also like using this because then I can have the fan blowing on me, and it's not getting in the way because I'm not using the mic on the headphones. So. Like right now, you're not hearing the fan, I'm assuming. But it is freaking warm, so I have the fan because it's hot. Yeah, it's
very hot outside.
I tried to do all the warm things this morning, but it still made the house hotter than I liked. Anyway, For those of you just joining us, it's not usually this much about cookies, at least as far as we can remember. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write in emails to that email. You get it. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with whatever the crap they want. The hat magically forwards us the emails. We read them, talk about them. It's pretty much it. It's not much to it. But we haven't let you down so far. So, somebody's been on vacation for a week. How's that been?
For a week? I mean, kind of, I guess. So Father's Day was on Sunday, but we went down to the farmer's on Saturday, and that was good.
So you went to see your father. Did you do anything with the kids?
No, I think, you know, having two kids instead of one, and one of them is running all over the place. I think they are taking that a new approach to how they manage their time. But no,
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. I mean, we communicated with them and stuff over the weekend, which was nice. But I mean, yeah, they're still adjusting to all that, which is, like you said, that's fair. And it was Abby's birthday yesterday, so that was nice.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on Facebook. Somebody wished her happy birthday. Let's check.
And we bought a Hunter Killer thing like weeks ago that we were saving until right now. We were going to start it like yesterday, but I actually was ill on Monday and was kind of recovering yesterday. So we'll start it right after this. It's a multiple episode one where you get several boxes, and it's a supernatural one, which we haven't done before. And it's a level 5 one. We've typically done level 3s. And it's only different from, say, a level 3 or 4 in that it's supposed to have red herrings in it. Like the level 3 ones, they don't really have any red herrings. If you just sort of follow the breadcrumbs, you'll go right to whoever it is. And you won't have to go, is that really who it is? Did I miss something? Do I have to wait and look at more evidence?
Are you going to be Jensen Ackles or Jared Padalecki?
I don't think I'm going to be either of those people. But so we're going to do that. I don't know how long it'll take because this one seems a little different than the other one. Like the boxes aren't even numbered. So apparently it doesn't even matter what order you do them. So I don't know how it's going to go.
I mean, you better get it straight or a killer goes free. I think that's part of it. Like these are based on actual cases and you get to submit a verdict.
But I think it'll be fine and I'll be able to report to everybody next time how it went, I guess.
Sweet.
But yeah, that's about it.
Watch any major movies? Sometimes you do that and you forget.
I did, yeah. We saw The Flash. We went to the theater and saw The Flash.
Oh, I'm very curious.
Well, We both liked it all right, but and, you know, I've seen other people's criticisms of it, and they're mostly correct. But I'd say overall, it was a pretty good movie, a good DC movie, especially. But it really felt like a film that, you know, was supposed to be released 10 years ago and would have been, you know, there was a lot of stuff in it that would have been relevant to what was going on in the cinematic universe back then.
I was going to say, and it is also one that is brought out to die, right? Like it's kind not of. Going anywhere,
but right.
both because it's not on the roadmap anymore. And because Ezra Miller is Ezra Miller.
Put it or whatever. So,
you cut out for a second there.
I just said he kind of imploded professionally.
Yeah.
But, you know, just putting all that aside, just looking at it as a film, you know, it had typical superhero film problems, but no more than any other. And just, I think, objectively, it's a perfectly good film. And if you're a DC fan, and if you're happy to see that character, because I'm a fan of the Flash in the DC comics, I'm happy to see him get a film and for it to be a reasonably good film. But then you add all of the stuff that contextualizes it, including Ezra Miller's stuff, and the fact that this film just feels like it was done 10 years ago and now they're only showing it 10 years late, you know. And it'd be really hard for me to recommend it to anybody. I mean, if I had seen it here at home instead, I would have thought to myself, yeah, I'm kind of glad I waited, because there wouldn't have been any reason to see this in the theater. And if you're not a DC fan or a Flash fan, I don't know why you would want to watch it at all. And of course, a lot of casual filmgoers who are mostly going to be interested in a superhero film, especially if it's from DC or Marvel, if it feels like it's part of a bigger thing.
Of course, because that's not the deal lately.
Yeah, it's not going to feel like it's part of a bigger thing. So I can see why it's not doing well box office wise. Is it not?
I know nothing about its response so far.
No, it's not doing well. I think the critical response has been okay. And I think the audience response has been okay. But I think even those things are going to suffer from irrelevance. Because if this film were just by itself, standalone, and it wasn't based on anything or connected to anything else, the story development and the character development would be completely different. But they are really relying on a lot of stuff that happened in films that were almost a decade ago now. And that's fine, I guess, but it's just not for the casual moviegoer. It's just, and again, like what you said, since everybody knows the whole thing's getting rebooted and this doesn't have any impact on anything else outside of it, you know, except for hardcore fans like myself, I don't see why anybody would have a reason to go. Even though I think it's a perfectly decent film, I don't.
I heard Zack Snyder had a different take on it that would have been way better, but Warner Brothers doesn't want anybody to know about it.
Probably has to do something with Barry remembering his first Oreo or not remembering it. Maybe that's what it was. So he goes back in time.
He goes back in time and finds it.
Finds the truth.
We were gonna see Across the Spider-Verse last night.
Mm.
And first we went out to eat. And we went to Cheddar's. Have you been to Cheddar's? Do you know Cheddar's?
I know of it, yeah.
I didn't until one moved in over by the Walmart and everything. And I think we went there one time, but it was very crowded and we were eating fast and I don't have a single memory of it. And so this time that wasn't the case. It's weird. I think I like it. It's weird. Well, it is in that genre of, I don't know what we call them now, family diners or fast casuals. I don't know. Applebee's tier restaurants. It's an Applebee's. Most of those places sort of have a theme about them.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a food-based theme. Red Lobster, obviously, seafood. Carlos Achilles is inspired Mex, whatever. Some of them are steakhouse themed or, you know, whatever's going on. Or a particular vibe, a particular kitchen, or like Bennigan's is supposed to be Irish food or whatever. Cheddar's appears to have just taken a little bit from like all of them in terms of the decor and the menu. There's nothing. I couldn't tell you what the vibe is exactly. And also, this is insane, and I didn't realize it until they showed up. So on their menu, one of their appetizers is croissants served with honey butter. But what I didn't realize is you just get one for being there. They just bring you a croissant that's just been dribbled in honey butter with your beverage. It was crazy. Also, they have a Monte Cristo as good as Bennigan's, and Bennigan's is the only truly great Monte Cristo I've ever encountered. So I am pleased about that. But it was a weird place. Anyway, long story short, we ate too much. And then we're like, do we really want to go watch a 2-hour and 16-minute movie right now? So we decided we're going to go this weekend instead. So we'll do that. But yeah, so finally be going to the movie theater this weekend, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that, that's the first time?
Since COVID.
No kidding. Wow.
At first, I didn't think it was safe, and then I just didn't give a shit. And I still kind of don't, but, you know, give it a shot.
Okay. Well, I hope it's a good experience for you.
Me too.
What else happened this week?
Let's look.
Yeah, let's look at your list.
I did realize recently this might be my first steps into getting in a support system for when my memory starts to go, because my memory might start to go. It's a very short list today. I thought there was something else to talk about. Oh, I do just want to talk for a second. I recently got probably about 60 or 70 games on Steam.
Oh,
for nothing.
Really?
Well, here's the deal. You may remember, back in the day, there was a period of a couple years where I was buying like every freaking Humble Bundle.
Yes, I remember that.
And so my Humble Bundle library has hundreds of games, most of which were on Steam. And just recently, because again, we're going to take, the annual Virginia beach trip. And so I'm like, I should come up with some games to play on my laptop because I won't be near my PlayStation. And I was like, I should log into there again and see what I have that I never bothered with. And so I went in there, and you can like click on a thing in your library and it'll say reveal Steam key, and you hit it and it'll show it. And then you click redeem and it just goes straight to Steam and you do it. So it takes like 10 seconds, maybe. So I was just sitting around the other day doing that with anything that looked remotely interesting until eventually Steam was like, this is as many games as we'll let you redeem in a day. You have to And then either yesterday or today, I honestly can't remember for sure, I went and I did another 27 of them or whatever. So yeah, I got a bunch of games in there. And I just this morning ordered a cheap USB controller because a lot of games on there seem cool but are not fun to play with a keyboard. So... but I have so many games on Steam. I really should play them. So we're going to try that out. But anyway, that's not on my list. There's only one thing on my list. That's the movie we ended up seeing last night when we came home instead in our house. Okay. The Pope's Exorcist. Starring Russell Crowe.
Yeah, I know. Starring Russell
Crowe. As the Pope's Exorcist.
Yeah, yeah.
And right. What they don't mention is actually starring Franco Nero as the Pope, which for the right people is amazing in and of itself, but that's neither here nor there. Trish, for some reason, Trish has come around to my world and she enjoys like ridiculous horror movies, but something about this one, from the moment the first trailer dropped, she's like, that's going to be awesomely terrible. And so she was like, I was like, we're gonna have to pay $6 for this. She's like, it's fine, let's do it. I'm like, okay, it's a little longer than we thought, so you're gonna be up a little later. She's like, it's fine. So we went to see the Pope's Exorcist. We saw the Pope's Exorcist. Okay, here's what I'll say.
Okay.
I mean, it's not good, but okay. I would have said right up front if it turned out it was good. Because that would have been shocking. It is a movie that I think was entirely made based on the idea that Russell Crowe would have a really fun time making it, and I suspect he did.
Huh.
It's not good, and sadly, it's not that bad. It's really, like, I probably wouldn't have mentioned it based on most of the film. It's a very boring, fairly predictable, not particularly scary possession movie.
Mm.
Except there are a couple of places, most notably the last 10 or 15 minutes of the film, where they are really, it becomes aware that the goal here is to create a film series of basically supernatural action buddy cop movie.
What?
Yeah. Except instead of cops, they're like badass priests.
And this is Russell Crowe and who?
Well, I mean, spoilers a little bit, but the other major priest in the movie. Russell Crowe is the Pope's exorcist, so he gets brought in. And the local guy is like young and uncertain and sort of, you know, falters and stuff, but eventually he becomes badass too. And seriously, like, the end segment is a full-on, like, CGI heavy battle with evil that includes, I swear I am not making this up, it includes a small bit of what I would refer to as Power Rangers grade synchronized choreography while reciting prayers to kill, to wipe out the demon
in Latin.
Well, it's a whole plot point what language it is at various times.
Oh, I see.
Because one of the priests is Italian and one of the priests is Spanish, and they try to speak in English as much as possible because of the audience. And so that's a whole the deal. Is a so whole the plot deal.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the movie can. And then the very, like, I want to dance around this. It's a spoiler. It's not a, it's more interesting than the movie, and nobody should see the movie anyway. But at the very end, like, out of fucking nowhere, they're like, so, because the mythology in this movie is that the demons are the 200 angels that were cast down with Lucifer. And this movie, it turns out that the location we're dealing with is one of the 200 locations. But in the process, somehow, I don't remember when, we got this map that theorizes where the other 199 is. And we do this whole thing at the end where we bring Russell Crowe and the young guy into a section of the Vatican that we didn't see before, when there's people running around and this is their whole operation where they've got all the Vatican's knowledge. And they're like, we have these 100. And basically we determine we're going to turn them into this, like, two-person, like, Men in Black bullshit. They're gonna go around and, like, hunt, very clearly setting up a franchise. And it's hilarious because it's just straight up, and it even, like, retroactively, there's a scene early on of Russell Crowe being chewed out by a bunch of higher level Vatican members because of something he did earlier, and it was like 20 minutes later I paused it and I said, I just realized that was the scene where our protagonist gets called into his captain's office and chewed out for being a loose cannon cop.
Yep. Yep.
And, like, that's where they threatened to take him off the case. It was 100% that scene, just with a lot more Italian accents and a lot more priest garb. It's, I don't know what they were doing, but I loved those parts. The rest of the movie is incredibly boring in a way that is even hard to make fun of. Like, it's just very, have you seen a scene in a movie where there's demonic possession? That scene is somewhere in this movie. It's not done as well in this movie, but it's there. Every scene you ever saw, like, it's all the classics and all the bits where, like, the demonically possessed person who's been demonically possessed for days suddenly talks in their own voice and is, like, sad, and other people are dumb enough to, like, get closer and then, oh, it turns out it was a trick. Huh? And the exorcists are real confident in themselves, but, oh, guess what? Oh, no, this demon has more information than the average demon, and that makes them doubt themselves. And at some point, we have to come to terms with possibly our past sins. All the usual deal. There's more here than you realize. But at the end, there really wasn't. It was still just a demon we had to, like, it's not good. But I do love I want to live in the world where it became a series. And to be fair, I don't know how it did at the box office. Maybe it's going to get a new one. I don't, but I highly doubt it. I hope not, because it's dumb. But I love the idea.
I was a little disappointed to find out that the Pope's exorcist didn't refer to Pope being possessed and needing an exorcist.
Right? No. Or my version, which was some poor innocent was possessed by the Pope.
That's a good one. Either one of those would have been great.
There is a moment in this one that is never explained, but like when shit is going bad over in Spain, the Pope kind of gets sick and it's like somehow related. And when things seem to be at their worst, the Pope does literally like spew projectile blood out of his mouth into the face of a different cardinal. But like, we never talk about it later.
Oh, okay. Never talk about it.
The Pope just gets better as the situation gets better. It's bad. But it's as much fun as I'm having now. It's not fun bad. It's just boring for the most part. But anyway, that was all I did. Let's read an email.
Okay. From Jazz.
I've heard of Jazz.
The subject line is role model suggestions needed. Mm. Yeah, I'd say that's true. Hello, Hatters. Oh, she's talking to everybody, not just us, I think. Klein was recently telling me about his mixed feelings.
Wait, who?
She said a friend of hers was recently telling her about his mixed feelings about Susie Ediazard coming out and transitioning. I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. My friend, who is a cis straight male, has mixed feelings because, while happy that Susie is able to be more open about who she is, my friend had always looked to her in the past as an example of what he thought was a person like him, a cis straight male who likes to wear clothes without regard to the way the clothes are gender identified. I was trying to think of some other role models for my friend. Harry Styles is who I came up with. Y'all have any other suggestions? So this is a situation where this friend of hers sounds like they appreciate sort of a non-binary approach to things like how you dress, what you like, things like that. Saw Izard as a good example of that. And now feels like Izard is picking a side and is like, oh no, the sort of neutral position that this person used to take has left me without a role model. Am I understanding it correctly?
That's how I'm interpreting it also. Wow.
This is the first I've heard of this. I didn't know.
I simultaneously have so much to say about this and don't think it's my place to speak on it, which means, of course, I'm just going to say a lot. I mean, okay, where to start? Yes. The sentient being formerly known as Eddie Izzard has gone through some phases, well, throughout their career that I've known, but in more recently began presenting more femme, at some point, I believe, got breasts, at least goes around with something that now looks like breasts. I suppose they could just be external constructs. At some point decided that she wanted she, her pronouns. And at some point got her hair really long. And at some point started using the name Susie. All of those in individual times, of which I've witnessed some. I have been a little bit off the individual for a while, for a variety of reasons, not least of which is mostly all involving privilege. Part of it is during this transition, I felt that Susie was going through a bunch of stuff and asking the world to accept while sort of not supporting the trans movement as a whole, mostly having to do with a friendship with J.K. Rowling and whatever. I also thought, insofar as when Susie was still sort of Eddie Izzard, I was starting to get very strong vibes of, oh, look, an incredibly successful white male comedian who at this point in his career basically thinks he knows everything and is getting sort of, at a certain point, they seem to think they were funnier than I did. And that's the kiss of death for me. It often comes with a comedian who has had a long and successful enough career. I seem to run into this to a lot of them, usually white men, but sometimes non-white men, and even sometimes women, a.k.a. Roseanne Barr, a.k.a. Chris Rock, a.k.a. most members of Monty Python, Rowan Atkinson, all these. I'm just kind of like, I don't need to hear from you anymore. So that's my take on Izzard, which is a very much a side point here. I think it's sort of, I have no interest in the concept of role models. I am fine with that person has an aspect to them or did a thing that I think is admirable. I should take that in me and think about how I can exhibit that same thing. But it has to be individual traits. There's no person out there that's going to match up. Like, you have to be you. It's role model. I don't think there should be role models. One should pay attention to the actions and words of others and find some of them to be worth emulating or worth admiring. That's great. But a person? No. People are people. You're always going to find out something that it doesn't work anymore. I am also see, this is only a problem if Jazz's friend needs somebody who has this form of gender expression but is also a cis straight male. To which I would say, why the hell does that matter? Because cis male doesn't have to, I mean, I guess I a little bit see cis male, if you're a cis male, seeing someone else being able to express their gender differently makes you think, I can do that. Sexual orientation shouldn't fucking be in it. And I understand people get their sticky fingers on them, but it's ridiculous to assume that. So to me, there's some great role models out there for Jazz's friend. Those role models are people like Billy Porter or Tilda Swinton or Eurythmics.
Annie Lennox.
Grace Jones. There are lots of people who sort of run the gamut of their gender expression. They don't happen to be straight men. Do it anyway. Like, I don't.
Well,
and this is where I fall apart. I'm like, I guess I don't understand how role models are supposed to work.
Well, first of all, I'd point out, like you were saying, it should be traits and not a person, which I agree with that too. I have no idea if that's, I mean, this is a trait, being able to dress however you like without worrying about gender stuff. So perhaps all the person's interested in is that trait and not really about the person.
Except they're not, because if that was the case, we wouldn't have to be like, who's also a straight cis man.
Well, that's the other side of it. I think that cis straight men in society, I think there's a lot of pressure on, let me say it this way. You know, I know a lot of straight women who like to wear their hair short, and they like to wear clothes that is very masculine, but they're straight. And they don't like that people assume that they're gay. It's not that they have a problem with gay people or anything like that, but there's a lot of social pressure to, you know, they would just like it if people didn't do that, but people do that. And yes. I think this guy's probably right to think that if he dresses however he wants, if it's accepted at all, which it might not be, but if it is, it might be assumed that he's gay, which I suppose people wouldn't have a problem necessarily with that, but it's like, why should that be a thing? Why should, like you just pointed out, that's ridiculous that should be a thing, but it is a thing, and it's not this guy's fault that it's a thing. It's just
no. And that's fine. And if that's the situation, fine, whatever. How does Eddie Izzard, having stayed Eddie Izzard, change that at all? Is it like people are like, oh, I'm going to assume this guy is gay, and he can be like, no, I'm just an Eddie Izzard.
Well,
and now he has to be like, I'm just an Eddie. Well, I mean, a Susie Eddie Izzard, but
they also might assume he's trans, which he's not. You know, yeah, it shouldn't be a thing at all.
But I'm like, does the friend no longer think this is possible? Like, this was a condition that was possible, and Eddie Izzard was proof of it. And now it's not possible?
I think it's maybe, I don't know, but I can see it being more of a representation thing. Like,
I'll give you that.
This person's this way, so that makes sense.
It was cool that there was a ostensibly straight white cis man who went around dressing however they wanted, wearing makeup, wearing dresses or suits or whatever. That was cool, but also, there was a known celebrity like that.
Yeah, but also pointing out how this is a non-issue. Like, I'm doing this, and it's like, yes, not a big deal. We don't have to make a big deal out of it. That was a cool part of it too. Not just that he was doing that, but that he was showing, look, the world's not ending. You know, this is not a terrible thing. Other straight, cisgendered men could do this if they wanted to, and it wouldn't be a problem.
And it was cool that was there. I guess maybe if we take role model for, maybe it becomes semantic. Let's take that out. Let's say it was cool to have that, and it's a shame to not have that example. Obviously, nobody should deny what they want to do just to be an example for people. But that was cool, and it's a little sad that there doesn't seem to be one. What are some examples? This I can work with. In which, unfortunately, I think the answer is Harry Styles, sort of. It seems like Harry Styles often does it to draw attention to the fact that Harry Styles is doing it. And I am sure in the world of high fashion, you might be able to find another example, but I can't think of any others. And I mean, it is a shame that representation, that one primary point of representation has sort of vanished, I guess.
It's a bigger shame that there even has to be something like that. Like, why can't people just wear what they want to wear, do what they want to do? It's just so silly.
And I mean,
shape about it.
If you look, like, the places to look would be things like the Met Gala. Look at all the looks. Most of the straight men are dressed in boring suits, but some of them do wild things. Most of the ones that do wild things are often queer in some fashion, but I get there are exceptions. I think I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting question. Do you think someone who they identify as cis and straight, regardless of whether or not they're white, but they're straight, they insist they're not anything like bi or anything else, and they're cisgendered, but they like to dress in these traditionally female ways, does that place them somewhere in the queer community just because of that?
Well, I mean, the question is, I mean, the question is, I don't know. And I here is one thing I know for certain. Were this question to be posed to the entirety of the queer community, there would be no consensus. I promise you that. I mean, you get into things because Eddie Izzard used to identify, Susie Izzard, who was Eddie Izzard, used to identify as a transvestite, which is largely an outdated term now, but one could argue that it involves this kind of thing. It generally was put forth as though it were a kink or a fetish of a straight cis individual, right, as opposed to this is just how I choose to express myself. So I don't know if the term applies anymore. And I mean, I think that's up to you. I would say in general, the umbrella queer community, insofar as there aren't like the LGB Alliance in the UK or other exclusionary groups, the inclusive versions of the queer community would say the various axes of LGBTQIA whatever revolve around gender orientation and sexual orientation. Or sorry, gender identity and sexual orientation. So if your fashion choices are tied into your gender identity, then yes, I would think you would be included. If your fashion choices are just, I think this looks good, then I would think not.
Interesting.
But I don't know. I myself, back when, shit, I don't really know what my whole vibe was then. But at a certain point, it was college, so I probably was trans at that point. I don't know. I would occasionally dress up in men's formal wear. I had some really nice suit coats and nice outfits, and then full makeup. And that was a look I sported a few times. Back in the day, we would call that a queen that wasn't a drag queen. It was sort of a different vibe, but I don't know that we say that nowadays. And I really thought that was cool. I think more men and less women should wear makeup. I think men should feel more free to explore makeup, and I think women should feel more free to not explore makeup if they don't want to. I don't know good examples. But to be fair, if the question had just been, what are some good role models? Honestly, literally only one person is coming to mind at this point. There's only one left. One really good role model out there. And that's probably just because I don't know why he wouldn't be. It's LeVar Burton. LeVar Burton is an absolute treasure. As far as I know, he's literally never done anything wrong in his entire life. I love him. He is so fundamental to my upbringing in such a variety of ways.
He's marvelous. Yeah. Were you a Reading Rainbow fan?
I was a Reading Rainbow fan. I was young enough that when Next Generation happened, the thing I was most excited about was that it had LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow. I was too young for Roots, but now that I'm older, I see the huge significance there. I mean, just an amazing gentleman. But I'm sure he's not perfect, and I'm sure there are terrible things hiding somewhere, like there are in all human beings. But since I don't know them, he's still good. Do you hear that? There's some kitties fighting in the other room.
There we go. There's some kids outside my window making noise. Oh. I hear that. You can hear that?
No, I can hear cats in my house.
Oh, kitties. Okay.
Yes,
we've had kitties. This problem before. You mean cats. You don't mean children.
Kitties. Yes, I don't ever say kitties because that really sounds like...
Yeah, I know. Like it did sound weird.
Child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. We've talked about how incredibly fucked up a movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is a fucked up movie. And not just because of the child catcher, but because the entire thing was just a story Dick Van Dyke was telling. Including the part where a woman sings a song about how she secretly loves him. He is telling her a story in which she sings a song about how she secretly loves him. Also, he's telling the children a story in which they get captured by the child catcher, which is the movie's so fucked up. Roald Dahl is not like I don't understand how Western civilization is just going around being okay that Roald Dahl existed. The man was clearly a psycho. He just wrote a bunch of children's books that could have been made into their own horror franchises. Like, every Roald Dahl story is just so fucked up. And he's a beloved children's author.
That's, you know, a lot of the earlier versions of fairy tales were pretty scary and brutal, too.
Yeah, and we're not going around saying, you know the dude who came up with that bit in Red Riding Hood where you have to piss yourself in bed because the wolf said so? He's really just a treasure to the literary world.
Well, it's like a genre, though, of this continued. I mean, there's, you can find a lot of very contemporary stories where horror and death and things like that are a big part of it, but it's still geared to kids.
No, it is not. You're lying. It's geared to adults.
Kids can see it.
Really not. Also, most of them do not have the levels of psychological horror that the average Roald Dahl story has.
Oh, well, maybe.
Good and evil in one thing, but like Roald Dahl likes to mind fuck with us, and I don't appreciate it at all.
I'm thinking of like Series of Unfortunate Events.
Well, I also think Series of Unfortunate Events is a great example. If you had told me Roald Dahl wrote those, I would have been fine. I looked that shit up. Those stories are fucked up.
Well, this is what I'm saying. There are these very popular things out there like that for kids, which, again, is not a new thing because a lot of the stories people used to tell kids were full of horrible and scary things.
And I mean, I guess we got the Hunger Games.
Yeah, although that's technically young adult, I suppose. I mean,
yeah,
some of this stuff is clearly like for at least junior high kids, maybe, or kids who are in higher grades in elementary school who are pretty good readers, I think. I mean, I don't know what the reading level is of, like, say, the Harry Potter series. See, I don't know. You have to be
in my day as a kid, I just read grown up books, and they're incredibly inappropriate, but it made sense because they were for grown ups. I did have somebody who used to be a professional literary editor, and she did explain to me that technically young adult just means the protagonist characters are of a certain age. There is technically nothing that determines content requirement or exclusion to be a young adult book. However, the ones that tend to become famous and big movies and stuff like that have the broad appeal of not being like that,
right?
And so I have sort of, which is why I'm a little more inclined to, like, I kind of want to read the Lockwood and Co books even though they are for a younger audience, because just the concepts look cool to me.
But that's another interesting thing, is that young protagonists in stories is also a pretty old, you know, like King Arthur was 15 or something when his story starts with pulling the sword from the stone or what have you. So, you know, a lot of older stories have young protagonists in them.
But also coming of age used to be of a different age there. But I think that makes sense because in general, the young people are the ones crazy enough to do the things that lead to adventures.
Right.
It's part of, I vacillate, and now it's done, so it's done. But my protagonist in my book is in her 20s. And sometimes I find that difficult because, A, I need to keep my references straight. I don't want to reference things from my childhood because this character was born much later. But also, I have to sort of remember, like, I don't want to say anything that is too, has too much accumulation of wisdom in it, for lack of a better term. Like, you know, the shit that you didn't know when you were in your 20s, but now you know. Like, if I'm writing a character in their 20s, they probably don't know that shit. So that can be hard sometimes. But it seems weird. Becca James Lowenstein is essentially going to be my age. But there's a lot of hoops to jump through as to why that works. I did actually think about that. I thought about writing a series where it's essentially the whole you're a wizard, Harry, chosen one shit. But it's somebody in like their 40s is when they get chosen. No, I don't think anybody's done that.
I don't think so either.
And
that's
I feel
really
like
good.
It's a whole different perspective.
It would be, I would think, yeah.
It's like, you're saying I'm special? No, it's, you're saying I what now? You're saying I have to... Wait, I have a lot of questions before we go on this epic journey. If we go on this epic journey.
Including why now? If I was born the chosen one...
Right? Right?
Why now?
There is there's a tabletop role-playing game, Monster of the Week, that's based off of the Apocalypse Engine. And it's supposed to be one of those, you know, like Supernatural or something, where like each adventure is, oh, there's a new scary monster and you have to learn about it and hunt it and whatever. You know, so it's nice and simple. And all the Apocalypse world-based things have playbooks, which are essentially the characters. And they're conceptual based rather than other things. And in Monster of the Week, there's one, I forget what it's called, but it's basically you were a chosen one and you refused your destiny.
Mm.
And Adventure Zone is the section I'm currently listening to is doing Monster of the Week. And Justin's playing a guy who like as a kid was granted visions and he was chosen to do something and he decided not to. And now he's just a, like, middle-aged park ranger who's getting wrapped up in things again, and like A, some of it's sort of familiar, and B, he's very hesitant to be like, no, I already said I wasn't going to go for this. And so I that's a really fun dynamic that I haven't seen many times before.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Who is it? Crap. It's a lesser known comedy guy in Hollywood who starts with initial, I don't know, he's one of the guys, the old movie Mystery Team that Donald Glover and two other guys made. It's one of those guys. I cannot remember his name with that, but he wrote a book. I do remember the book is called Crap Kingdom, and I didn't read it, but it's essentially a fantasy story, and it's about a kid who gets chosen to go be the savior of this fantasy world. And it turns out the fantasy world is really bad and like junky and terrible. And so he decides he doesn't want to do it. And he like flees in the fantasy world. And then later they get a different chosen one. And he basically kind of gets jealous. And it basically ends up being the fantasy villain. Because it was all shitty. And then they brought in somebody else and he felt. And I'm like, I like that a lot. That sounds very cool to me.
Yeah, interesting.
I do that a lot of times when I'm thinking about things to write. I'm like, I don't know. It's fine to write things that other people have written, but then you have to ask yourself why.
Mm.
And so there are times when I'm like, oh, I have an idea for a short story. It's not an original idea. Lots of people have had it. I'm like, I have to then be like, so am I going to bring something to this that you couldn't already get by reading X? Because if the answer is no, why am I doing it? It's, to put it into a lovely metaphor that my wife makes use of, why do a cover of a song if you're just doing it to sound like the original? Yeah. Which happens far too often.
Yeah, that's a good question.
We just heard one when we were at Cheddar's, actually, that it came up again. I cannot remember the song now, but it was something you would not expect to have had a cover. And it was also a cover that just sounded like the original. And I was like, what the crap? But, so yeah, often I'm like, I could tell this story again for some reason. But
I think the twist of the half-eaten Oreo in the toddler's hand is, I think it's a pretty good twist. It's a story people have told, but not quite like that.
Where did you get this cookie?
I'm going to laugh about that for weeks. I just
I don't
The image that makes is just so funny.
That's the thing, is I don't know why the image is so clear.
Yeah, the image too. Is
legit like a 10-month-old child, still bald, in a onesie, with a half-masticated Oreo hand, and the other hand grabbing the shirt of its parent and saying, at this point, it's straight up just Ben Affleck's Batman voice. Where did you get this cookie? You have to tell me. Like, it's just there. It's fully formed.
Yeah.
I feel like I must have seen it at some point because it is such a clear image in that's my
inspiration.
Head.
That's inspiration, buddy. That's what that's called. Beautiful. Beautiful.
You never forget your first Oreo.
You never forget.
Do you? In a world.
I just love it so much. I've been thinking about it this whole time. We've been talking about all kinds of things.
Haven't heard a word you were saying. I'm just thinking about that baby with that Oreo being real angry.
I just can't stop thinking about it. It's great.
I have to bring this up. My wife, all on her own, magically transmog, but no, she ordered 2 pounds of Nerds.
That's a lot of Nerds.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Specifically,
you didn't put your foot down? I thought you would put Nerds.
First of all, I didn't know about it until it was ordered. Second of all, she did it with her own money. She can do whatever the fuck she wants.
Oh, right. Okay.
I don't think it was particularly expensive. I don't know because this is her whatever.
Just grape.
But it showed up. It's just grape, and it's just the little boxes like you would get trick-or-treating.
Oh, but 2 pounds of
them. But it's like 12,000 of them.
Yeah, right. A lot of them, yeah.
It's a huge bag. And disclaimer, she is showing much more restraint than I would had I ordered them.
Okay.
I would have taken those fuckers out in 2 days tops. But she is, I would say, on average, eating about a dozen boxes a day.
Yeah, a dozen.
Enough that apparently the food dyes are having an impact, a noticeable impact.
Oh, no.
Which I'm just like, we should not have done, this should not have happened. This should not be possible. You shouldn't be able to. It came in a box that said Rebel Smuggling Galactic Emporium. I don't know where she got it from, but it's maybe Star Wars themed?
Rebel Smuggling Galactic Emporium.
It's definitely Rebel Smuggling. I can see it here, but I can't read it. So yeah, and to my credit, I did have one box first thing, and I hadn't had Nerds in a while. Nerds are tasty. I miss Nerds. They're good. But she's offered several times since then. I haven't felt any. So I am, but yeah, just the other day, I went to throw something in the recycling bin, and I looked, and there was just a layer of empty Nerds boxes on the bottom. And that was like the day after it arrived.
Grape are pretty good too. I probably would have gotten strawberry for me.
She doesn't like artificial strawberry in general, and grape is her favorite. I miss the days there was like lemonade and then like red berry or something in a box. Those were really good. But grape and strawberry are the sort of traditional, the originals, as it were. The Hydrox of the Nerd family.
Oh, they've got Boylan's Birch beer. Nice.
As a Nerd?
No, they sell sodas.
Who's they? Oh, usually got Rebel Smugglers. Or yeah. Rebel Smuggling.
Rebel Smuggling Galactic Emporium.
Oh, wow.
Then they've got these sodas in gallon bags. 5-gallon bags.
That's weird.
How does that work?
Probably not great.
Boylan, right. They make good stuff, though. Boylan does.
Boyland, where the boys come from. That was another Adventure Zone thing. They name characters after people who tweet about them. And there was one that was Boylan, so he made a character, but he didn't think about it. So when he introduced him, he literally introduced him pronouncing it Boyland. He was this gruff dwarf named Boyland. And so that was how they changed. All right. We stopped being a podcast at some point recently, so we should probably end it for the week. Go to AetherTheater.com if you want to see all the Williams stuff. Keep an eye out. There's going to be another sale over at Smashwords. So for those of you who haven't read my book purely because $3 is a lot, soon it might be free again. But you can get it if you're willing to spend $3 at Smashwords.com. Look for my book, Oddwings, Oddwings. Also, go to the blog, themagictalkinghat.com. Tell us your crystal clear memory of your first Oreo. Prove us wrong. Also, your thoughts on anything else there here. How did you feel about the Pope's Exorcist? How close are you to Ezra Miller, and are you willing to come down to the station and answer your questions? Which Izzard are you? Who's your role model? What did you do when LeVar Burton refused your proposal of marriage? We've all been there, except theoretically his actual wife. How did you react? I cried 4 days.
My role model is cinnamon frosted.
Well, I know I ain't sleeping tonight. I'm just going to be playing that over and over in my head, trying to figure out what the fuck is going on there. Cinnamon frosting.
Great.
I mean, there are worse things you could be.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.